This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Do we have a show for you today on Baseball Outside the Box? We bring you two of the best general managers ever in the game of baseball, two of the most respected people in the game of baseball. First of all, the former Dodger general manager, Fred Clair, and also the former Chicago White Sox general manager, Roland Heeman, who spent time with several franchises. Both these individuals, World Series champions, many awards between the two of them, and we are going to hear some fantastic things. These two individuals are the epitome of first-class leadership. We're going to be talking about all kinds of areas of the game, so sit back and be ready for a great show. And remember, Baseball Outside the Box is a show that brings you the best minds in the game of baseball who love the challenge of status quo, and I am your host, Pete Caliendo. We want to remind you, we're with the Lineup Media Group, so go to lineupmediagroup.fm, check out all the podcasts. A thank you to Brian Crock, our producer, for producing the show and putting all the stuff up on the website. So sit back and listen to our conversation with Fred Clair first, followed up by Roland Heeman.
All right, welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. This is going to be a great show. I want to welcome our special guests. We've got two special guests that know each other really well. This is going to be an awesome show. I want to welcome the former general manager of one of the historical franchises ever in baseball, the Los Angeles Dodgers, Mr. Fred Clair. It is great to have him on the show. Fred, how are you today?
Pete, I'm very well, and it's good to be with you.
I'll tell you what, I'm excited because following you is a good friend also. I mean, it's going to be a two-for-one day, Roland Heeman, so that's going to be a great show with both you on.
Well, Roland's a dear friend for many, many years, and it's great to have known Roland. He's done so much for the game, so it's an honor to be accompanied with him at any time.
Fantastic. And, you know, what I believe, and I know this because of the history, you know, we just have two first-class individuals on Baseball Outside the Box, and I want to start with this because I think it'll lead into what you guys did with the Dodgers as far as the class organization. This is something you may not remember, but I got to say it because I've never got a chance to thank you for it. Long time ago, over 20 plus years, I was with USA Baseball, started a pilot program, and our 15U national team went to play in Japan. And at that time with Dick Case, I decided to send you a letter, didn't know you at the time, you were the general manager. And I explained that we would be coming through California on the way to Japan to play in the World Championships. Could we practice at the field? You know, I wrote the letter thinking, yeah, sure, nobody's going to respond. Or if they do, they're just going to say we're busy, because I knew it was an off day. To my amazement, I got a letter back from you where you said, we will open the stadium to you. And when we got there, it was first class. Everything was laid out. Your assistant came down, helped out with everything. We took batting practice, infield, outfield. So I just wanted to thank you because I think that just shows the class organization that the Dodgers were, led by you and Mr. O'Malley.
Well, Pete, I appreciate that. And as you well know, any successful organization begins at the very top. And Walter O'Malley and Peter O'Malley set the tone and wanted to do everything to do things in a proper way. And they were very successful at that. And they were just wonderful leaders of a great organization.
And that's why I led with that, because I want you to kind of give our audience, you know, in the U.S. and around the world, a little background in the Dodger. You know, there was a Dodger way on the field, but there was also a Dodger way in the front office. How did that all start? How was it laid out? And what were some of the, you know, top characteristics, what made the Dodgers, you know, the class organization they were?
Pete, I think it really, from a baseball standpoint, clearly dates back to the time of a true legend and a great contributor to the game in so many ways, and that was Branch Rickey. Because with Branch Rickey, it was the emphasis on scouting, on player development, on really being so studious about the game, but with a passion for the game. Because from that, and of course, the beginning and then the evolution of Dodger Town, which so it was so important to the Dodgers. But that really was the foundation. And then from Mr. Rickey, and then of course one of the people who was there at the time as a player and who took a lot of the Rickey approach was Al Campanis, Bill Schweppe, our longtime farm director. So there was this continuity that could be traced back to Branch Rickey. And because when you think about it in terms of from a baseball standpoint, as the managers of the Dodgers, you had Walter Alston, who was there from 1954 to 1976, and then Tommy taking over and becoming the manager and being there from 77 to 96. So basically, you had two managers who were there for 40-plus years, and that was such a key part of this evolution and this continuity. I once asked Bill Schweppe, our longtime farm director who went back to Rickey days, I said, Bill, what is it in your mind? What is it that you think has led to the success that we've enjoyed? And he said, one word, Fred, comes to my mind, and that is continuity. Because it was just not the continuity, but it was trying each season, each spring, each season, to improve, to do things better, to learn from the past. So I think in essence, from a baseball standpoint, and the same was true, Pete, in the front office. I mean, for years, I mean, we had two ticket directors, two stadium operations, but there was never the sense of complacency, even though people had been there long term. There was never the feeling that, well, everything is secure or we can be complacent. It turned out to be quite the opposite.
You know what? That's outstanding. And I certainly understand that when you keep the consistency of people and quality people, you just build that organization. Now, you also had to, you know, supplement the minor leagues with coaches and managers. What were some of the characteristics that you guys looked for in some of these guys that were managing and coaching ball players?
Well, you know, when it comes to managers, and you and I had spoken offline about this, and I hadn't really made a study, but when I looked at this, it's quite remarkable, Pete, from the standpoint of managers. There are, on a quick look, I believe there are 22 managers in the Hall of Fame. There are, of those 22 managers, I guess maybe it speaks to the time that I've been around, but I've known 11 of the, 10 or 11 of the 22. And then again, on this subject, when I mentioned Walter and Tommy and the continuity, only two managers in history, and it sounds like when you give their names, it goes back to the beginning of the game, Connie Mack and John McGraw. Mm-hmm. But in thinking about the people who became managers, who came from the Dodger system, Bobby Cox, who was a recent inductee into the Hall of Fame, of course, Sparky Anderson. So, you know, each person, each manager who's achieved this length, and in fact, the person now who's ninth on the list, which is almost incredible for me to believe, talk about the passage of time, is Mike Socia.
Yeah.
Mike Socia. He's ninth on the all-time list. But I think, Pete, when I think about the people that I've known who reached a Hall of Fame status, and you don't have to be a Hall of Fame to be great, because mm-hmm. I've known many great people who manage. But they're different as individuals, but one of the common traits is just a true driving passion for the game of baseball. Wow. Sparky Anderson never reached great heights as a player, Bobby Cox never reached great heights as a player. Tony La Russa never reached great heights as a player. And yet all of these people, because of their passion and because they had a solid background in the game, they came from good, solid organizations. And I think that's a fundamental part of this. And I always reached out, when you talk about people who were managers, utilizing the people who had been in a manager position to join our pro scouting staff, Art Howell and Steve Boros, who, in my view, were outstanding managers, outstanding people. Phil Regan, all became key parts because their understanding of their game, their ability to judge and understand the game, led them to be not only good managers, solid managers, great managers, but from my very close working association, clearly the understanding of what great baseball people, what great judges of talent, what great instructors all of these people have been.
You know, Fred, also you had to pick, you know, coaches within the system. Was there a system that you guys used? How did you pick all these guys?
When you, Pete, when you look at the Dodgers, and again, this is so fundamental, and if you take any area, and let's take one of the most important areas, and that's pitching in terms of the fundamental and the continuity of instruction. And we always promoted from within our system. I mean, from my time when I first joined the Dodgers, and the great Red Adams was the pitching coach. And it went from Red Adams to Ron Peronoski, who had been in our farm system. And it went from Ron Peronoski to Dave Wallace, who had been in our system. And it went to Glenn Gregson. And then it went to Rick Honeycutt, who didn't play in the Dodgers, well, didn't play in the minor leagues for the Dodgers, but certainly knew the Dodgers system inside and out. And that same thing held true in other areas. One of the people that I brought in as our hitting coach was Ben Hines, who was came from, as you know, Pete, came from the college. Background, but was an outstanding hitting instructor, outstanding. Yep. And then we made a move, and I brought in Reggie Smith. Yep. And Reggie, in my mind, is the top hitting instructor in the game today, period.
Agreed.
Period. In my mind, and what he is doing and has done for international baseball has been tremendous. And Reggie's a bit of a rarity to the degree, Pete, as you know, that when you have great managers, hitting coaches, pitching coaches, seldom do you have the ingredient of a person who was a true star as a player have this gift to be able to teach. Reggie is one of the few gifted people in that regard. He was an incredibly good player. But for anybody who knows Reggie, his real passion has always been teaching to this day. I think bottom line, Pete, and you know from your involvement in the game and dealing with coaches and being involved in international baseball, when you're assembling a group to go to another country to teach the game, to promote the game, what is it you look for? You look for two things. You look for the quality of the person. What is he all about? What is that person all about? And then what is his passion and what is his knowledge? And when you combine those things, because you can have the knowledge, but there's a saying that I've become very fond of using when it comes to teaching in baseball or in life. You have to show them that you care before you show them what you know. So when you are teaching, whether it's a student in a classroom, as I have taught, or you're teaching the fundamentals of baseball as a hitting coach or pitching coach, you know what, Pete? Those of us in the game like yourself know, you have to make that connection with that athlete. You have to show him that you care about him as a person, as a player, that you want to help him. Because if you're screaming at him, yelling at him, dismissing him, you as a teacher are a failure.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on with Fred Clair, former general manager of the historical franchise Los Angeles Dodgers. You can tell why the Dodgers have been so successful. Fred, I got to ask you this part, because, you know, you've been in the game so long that you've seen, you know, what technology you guys had back then when you were with the Dodgers and the technology now. What's your opinion of all the different technology that's kind of changing the game a little bit?
Well, I've always been an advocate of information, mm-hmm. of information. That's what I really sought at all times. What is the best information that we can compile to make judgments on players, on training, on everything that we do from a medical standpoint, and relying on the great Dr. Job and Dr. Melman and others in the Dodger organization. So I always had an interest in analytics, and prior to that, just from a what I will term a statistical analysis. I hired Craig Wright, who was an unknown in baseball, and he was one of the forerunners. I formed a company that continues today with Ari Kaplan, who I met when he was a student at Caltech, and a brilliant young man who's really been one of the drivers. So I totally want to understand and be involved with all that I can from an analytical standpoint. But you know what, Pete, and it's almost trite to say, if you don't base that or have that with the opinions of your coaches, of your staff, of your scouts, it doesn't mean diddly damn. No one ever ran a successful baseball team from a computer. Has never happened, and it will never happen. Mm-hmm. And that's because the thing that I talk about in terms of assessing a player, what he's all about, what his makeup is, what his drive is, what his habits are, you have to know that individual in depth. But to that, you can add the analytical approach. And some of these things are absolutely remarkable that, I mean, that can now be measured. The impact of the bat hitting the ball and the velocity created, that's a measurable thing today. Those things were never able to be precisely measured. And there was an understanding from the standpoint of good scouts and good baseball people. But I welcome the analytics. But to me, it would never, should never be the driver of a decision. I want more than that, but I want to consider that also.
You know, and what I'm hearing, which I love, is for all our coaches and players, even parents and all over the world, you know, what you're also saying is, you're utilizing anything you can all the time to get better, whether you're a coach, a player, or anything that you can find out there. And you're never satisfied with the, you know, just doing the same old thing over and over.
How do we get better tomorrow? That was always the thing that drove me. How can we get better tomorrow than we were today? And to continue to reach and to drive that and to look at various things, and not just accepting because something used to be in a certain way. I had a call from a very well-known agent, Arne Tellem, 20-plus years ago, who said, Fred, there's a pitcher in Japan. He said, I've been asked to help this agent, Don Nomura, represent him because he can't seem to find anybody interested in this pitcher who's been pitching in Japan. And at that time, teams weren't signing players. And he said, Fred, his name is Hideo Nomo. He said, would you have an interest? And I said, Arn, I have no idea who Hideo Nomo is, but I'll tell you what. We will use our resources to find out everything that we can about him. And that, of course, led to the signing of Hideo Nomo. My point there is that if you're not open, that even though there hasn't been a history there, that this would be something different. If you're not open to that, you're not going to gain. And I think the Dodgers through the years, like a lot of other solid major league clubs, were always looking beyond, looking at how we could further the development of a player during winter ball. That's why it was always so important to me that we had Phil Regan managing in Venezuela, that we had a Terry Collins managing in the Dominican. And that wasn't something that came out of my mind. That was there in Cuba with Branch Rickey and the scouts and Al Campanis and Tommy Lasorda. It's seeking the best.
You know what? And here's what I was just thinking as you're talking about that. As a general manager, I'd love for our audience to know, on a daily routine, what made you, and I don't want to say better, but I guess I got to use the word better. What made you, what were the edges, what were you looking for daily to make yourself better, to stay in front of the competition? Because you were all trying to get the same players. You're all trying to make the teams better. What were some of the daily routines that you went through?
Well, I don't, Pete, I don't think we were unique. Never thought of ourselves as being unique, but I saw it as a 24/7 job, because when you're in that position, and as a general manager, and there was a structure during my time, and you had the responsibility of overseeing, not running, overseeing the scouting department, the player development department. When you're responsible for what's happening and overseeing the medical department, when you're involved with the agents. So it was a, you have to be, in my view, you have to be totally passionate about the game and dedicated to the job, to where you feel after each day, each week, each month, each season, that you could really say to yourself that I gave the best of what I had to give. Mm. It may not have been enough. It may have included many mistakes, but it's all that you can really ask of yourself, is to give everything you have to give. And by the same token, you're asking that of the people around you. So you need to set the tone of what your dedication and work ethic are all about, because from that penetrates through. And I always think the best judge is this type of thing, Pete, is this. It's very simple. You to really have an understanding, you ask the people who, not the person himself, who may have been fortunate to be in the position of general manager. You have to ask the people who worked for him or worked with him or who competed against him. And I've often felt that becomes the best assessment, because people in the game understand the game. And so you have certain people in the game who may not have one, two, or three, or any world championships, but who certainly are world championship people. So my day was always occupied by giving all that I could give. And also the communication, Pete, becomes very, very important. I mean, I was very strong, as you probably know, in ongoing meetings, conference calls with our scouts, with our player development people. Once a week, I would be hearing from our minor league pitching managers, pitching coaches, and hitting coaches for all of our farm clubs. How difficult is that to do? What is more important than that, than to be aware of what's happening in your system? So I think it's the enjoyment of the competition. It's wanting to drive yourself and everybody else to be as good as we can be and to be able to communicate that.
You know, at the end there, I heard the word communication several times. And folks, you know as good as anybody else, communication is the key. And in those days, you guys were using phones and you were writing notes. You know, nowadays it's texts and it's emails. And but, you know, Fred, the GM of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he's on Twitter at Fred_Claire. I-R-E. I follow him. You need to follow him. There's a lot to learn here. He's also on Facebook. So, you know, we've all come a long ways, Fred. And it's good. I kind of work this backwards a little bit because the next thing I wanted to mention, you know, we've got a lot of young people trying to get into the game, not just in the Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball, but also into independent or college and high school. And sometimes, unfortunately, times have changed and people want things quick. And I want people to know this because I was reading that you and your brother bought a film reel of the 1948 series. And that's how your career got started. But then talk about a little bit about that and also that you were a sports writer and an editor, and that's how you ended up with the Dodgers by covering them.
Well, it goes back, Pete, to the love of the game. The first major league game that I ever saw was at Crosley Field, and it was in the late 1940s, maybe 48. I was 12, 13 years old. And I loved the game. And as far as following the game, what really got me interested was my brother, my older brother, became a fan of the St. Louis Cardinals and started keeping this scrapbook, taking the box scores out of the paper each day. And so in those days, the Cardinals had the great teams of Musial and Slaughter and Marion and Shandy's and so many more. And since Doug and I usually competed at everything we did, I established my favorite team as the Cincinnati Reds. So the bottom line is that I just, having seen that first major league game, it was almost like magic. And then it was, for me, trying to figure out how can I stay connected to this game? And I really thought there would be two paths, Pete. I thought that there was the opportunity to be a coach, or then there was the opportunity to be in some other part, and I became a journalism major. I became a journalism major because I was interested in sports and wanted to cover sports. And even as a freshman in college, and this is someplace on the internet, to pass a feature writing class, you had to have 3 rejection slips. Well, it turns out I had 2, and the 3rd rejection slip wasn't coming, but it all came as a check in the mail that my article that I'd submitted to Baseball Magazine, Make Way for the Coast League, they decided to publish it, sent me a check, and really showed me that I had an ability here, or I could use my interest to find, hopefully, a career. And so that really was the starting point of it. And as a journalism major, and then working for newspapers, and then ultimately having the opportunity to cover the California Angels in the 1968 season, and then to have the opportunity to cover the Dodgers in 1969. And before that year was over, I was selected as the publicity director and went from publicity director to vice president of public relations and promotions, and then to executive vice president, and then to general manager.
You know, what a great story. And I wanted to bring that up because let's just show people in the, you know, in the game that, you know, you got to start somewhere and you got to work your way up. It just doesn't happen that fast. And you just did a great job. Now, I'd be remiss not to mention this because the O'Malleys and you did a lot for international baseball. And you have continued that because with our good friend Ryan Flynn with New Zealand Baseball, the president there, who's done an outstanding job. You're helping him, but you've also helped a lot of countries around the world. Tell us a little bit about the O'Malleys, the goal internationally, and what you've now continued to do.
Well, The O'Malleys certainly were real strong advocates for the growth of international baseball, and Mr. O'Malley, who was a visionary, Walter O'Malley, and making arrangements for the Dodgers to go to Japan, to play games in Japan, to have the Tokyo Giants with some of their great stars come to Dodger Town to train. And so that was there, and there was a history there, certainly before I started with the Dodgers. But it just continued. And Peter O'Malley maintained that same interest for growing the game and was extremely instrumental, as you know, in baseball becoming the demonstration sport in the 1984 Olympics, which ultimately led to a role for baseball in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And so the growth of the game, and to see the opportunities for growth, not just from the standpoint of trying to find talent, as we did in Mexico with Fernando, or in Japan with Hideo, or Korea with Chan-ho Park, or the Dominican with a whole host of players, and Venezuela. But to grow the game from the standpoint of what's best for the game. And so I was always enthused about that aspect. As a young guy, long before I became the general manager, I made a trip to Australia. And I really went there just on a vacation, more or less, and was a tennis player at that time when I had time, and saw what was happening in baseball there. And became enthused about how this game could grow in Australia, and came back and made the recommendation that we needed to get more involved in growing the game. And then we sent Red Adams and Monty Basgall and Guy Wellman and other very well-known baseball people into Australia. So my interest was always there. And then when you talk about opportunities or people who have an interest in the game, I had the opportunity, Ryan Flynn reached out to me. It was probably, 15 years ago, as a young guy from upstate New York who had an interest in baseball, had no real position in the game, but had a passion for it, mm-hmm. Got involved with baseball in Guam, and then went into some other business things and came to me, and then the opportunity came for him to be interviewed for the position of heading baseball in New Zealand. And I was a very strong advocate of his. I thought he would do a tremendous job, and indeed he has done a tremendous job. In fact, we had a chance to visit just a couple of weeks ago when Ryan was making a trip and came into Los Angeles. So his passion for the game led him to a position in the game. My advice to young people is you have to get into the stream. If you want to be involved in the game, first of all, you need a strong format for yourself. Education is critically important. But the other part is that the skills that you develop in whatever area they may be, whether it's analytics, whether it's marketing, whatever it may be, those can be transferred into the business of baseball. And it doesn't make any difference to me where you start if you have the opportunity to get into the game. Because if you look at career paths of people in the game, dear friend Sandy Alderson and all of his wonderful success was the team lawyer. I mean, you have people who came from other backgrounds who became successful in the game. But if you have that drive and that's where you want to be, you can find a place in the game. But I think, Pete, as you alluded to, you can't look and say, well, I don't want to start there, or this pay isn't good enough. It's a very competitive business. If you want to be in the game, you have to take those steps, believe in yourself, find an opportunity, and make the most of that opportunity.
Right, great advice. Love it. And we're almost coming to the end, but I did want to mention, you know, with Latin America, when it opened up and all these Latin players came into Major League Baseball in the minor leagues, you know, I really believe that, and I want to get your input on this, I really believe that it helped the game a great deal. And I think from one standpoint, it made our guys work harder because, you know, the Latin players, they need to get out of some of those countries and come to the U.S. to play. It's their goal. They have the passion. They play the game with a flair. And I just think some of our players at the younger levels were getting a little complacent at times. And, you know, I think Latin America has really helped, you know, baseball in general.
Well, nothing, as we know, nothing helps you improve more than competition. Mm-hmm. A drive within yourself and then competing and will determine the level that you can perform. But I do think this, Pete, that one of my greatest concerns about the game of baseball today, and you and your group are doing a remarkable job, we must do everything possible to grow the game domestically in the United States. And that's why I was John Young, a great friend, and I served on his first board on reviving baseball in the inner cities, because we're losing, and Major League Baseball is making efforts. I want to see those efforts improved. We're losing. Baseball is losing too many athletes, particularly in the major cities, in the inner cities, like in Los Angeles, to football and basketball. We have the best game in the world, on the planet, and we need to do everything that we can to encourage the youth to play the game of baseball. Because really, if you look at it even from a realistic standpoint, the chances of playing pro football or pro basketball depend so much on your size. And baseball isn't based on that. It's based on skill. So I think competition is great, but I want to see the game grow more, Pete, in this country.
Right.
And I think internationally, it doesn't mean that one suffers mm-hmm. because there's an emphasis on the other. It has nothing to do with it. When the game grows, the game grows. But we're not doing enough. We're not doing enough, in my view. I know so many people who, former major league players, who have taken the Los Angeles area, for example, who would love to be involved in teaching, who would love to be involved in promoting. That they're not. I think that we have a group of people who could be utilized in promoting the game, in teaching the game, that are not being utilized, and yet they want to be involved. So I continue to press for that. I just think that it all starts with the youth. Just as it starts with the youth on an international basis, and there's no question of that, it also needs to start, because it's the only place it can start where you're successful. We need to do more in the United States. We're not doing a good enough job, very frankly, and I know there's a lot done, so I don't mean to be critical. I mean to be constructive. We've got to grow the game in the United States more than we are.
You know what? And I agree with you. We talk about this on the show so many times about the grassroots level. And we even go deep into how important it is to help our volunteer coaches, because those are moms and dads, parents that work with these young kids. And if they can do a really good job, they'll keep kids in the game longer. So I'm with you on board. And I think we definitely need to do a lot more in the U.S. Now, I want to end it with this. Two things. One, I want you to tell everybody about your book, My 30 Years in Dodger Blue. And then any last minute advice for coaches, player, or parents, coaches, or players out there that you want to give? You know, this has been outstanding. It's your time now.
Well, the book, I'll pass quickly. It's there. It was written a number of years ago. The thing I would like to mention currently, Pete, is a event that I'm having to support the City of Hope, where I've undergone cancer treatment. And so I'm having a golf tournament on August the 20th at Oakmont Country Club in Glendale. And we'll be giving the Celebration of Life Award at the dinner to Tommy Lasorda, people like Oral Hershiser and Mickey Hatcher and Sean Green, Reggie Smith, Bill Russell, Wes Parker, and many others will be playing in the tournament. We had a tournament last year that raised $200,000 for the City of Hope. And for anyone interested in playing in the tournament, attending the dinner, or simply supporting the wonderful hospital that is the City of Hope that has done so much for so many. The number to call is 626-218-4506. Again, 626-218-4506. And it's the Fred Claire Celebrity Golf Classic supporting the City of Hope. For the coaches, for the young people interested in the game, never let that passion leave you. Continue to try. And no matter what it takes, continue to work at it. Because if you love the game, and as so many of us do, and it has to be driven by the passion, once you have it, continue to do everything you possibly can to find a way to assist the game and be in the game. And I applaud all of those and the volunteers and others who do so much to grow our great game.
You know what, Fred, I did tell you it was the last thing, but I guess it's not because I've still got 2 minutes. And what I'm going to bring up right now is because you brought up a topic and I wasn't sure about it. You had battled cancer. And one of the things that you mentioned is you've always thought it was important. And I think this is important to bring out, to watch your health, watch what you eat. You were an avid runner. Explain what you do to stay healthy.
Well, Pete, I've always been a runner. I had a running route in every city in the National League. Because I felt to do my job as well as I could, I needed to be in good health. I needed to eat well. I needed to sleep well to be able to have the drive. And I've tried to maintain that. And even with cancer that I battled for 2 years, I'm as enthused today about the game and the opportunities of life at the age of 82 as I've ever been in my life. In fact, I have on my wrist that I got just yesterday because I wanted to add it, a Fitbit. It will show me how many steps I've taken today, how many walks, what my heartbeat is. Take care of yourself. You cannot do what you need to do if you're not in a good physical condition. It's a matter of being as healthy physically, mentally, and spiritually that you can possibly be. And if you equip yourself, Pete, it's a great question because it's the foundation, I believe, for success at whatever level that you may want to say success comes. Take care of yourself. Do the right things in life and give back in helping others, and you'll be amazed at where that path might possibly lead. So good health, because Pete, if I had not been in the health that I was when cancer struck me, and I would say this lastly and most appropriately, my cancer started from a little sunspot on my lip that I thought was minor. From all of the days and the years in the sun, not using the sunscreen on my lip, would put it on my face, my arms, and it developed into squamous cell carcinoma that went into my neck and my jaw and required a significant surgery and radiation, chemotherapy, and then immunotherapy. So you have to. We're going to have battles. We're going to face tough opponents as we go along. If we're not healthy, if we're not prepared, we're not going to be able to meet that opponent with the same competitive spirit as we should be able to meet each and every opponent.
Wow, that is outstanding. That, folks, that is Fred Claire, former executive and general manager of Los Angeles Dodgers. And that, I tell you what, 82 years old, that inspirational. I hope that I'm that way when I'm 82. That is outstanding. This has been a great, great show. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the show.
Thank you, Pete. Take good care of yourself and for all of those and who've sent good wishes my way. I greatly appreciate that. We look forward to seeing you along the way and the best to all of you and just wishing you good health and happiness.
And Fred, Claire also a supporter of the International Sports Group, the group, our group that goes around the world educating coaches and parents and players. Not to forget, on our show notes, we will have all of Fred's information, his charity golf outing information, his Twitter. We'll have out all that on the show notes. And we will be right back with Roland Hemond. All right, welcome, my good friend, and one of the best people in the game, the most well-known and one of the top general managers of the game, Roland Hemond. Roland, welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for being on the show, my friend.
Oh, I'm very pleased to be on.
Well, it's an honor. This is a two-for-one today. I just got done talking to Fred Claire, and now you. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than this.
Oh, thank you.
Here, now, between both of you, there's so much history in the game, you know, everything that you have done. I want our audience, because our audience is coaches, players, and parents all over the world and in the U.S., I want them to understand a little bit of your history, where you started, because you started a long time ago and worked your way up as a general manager. Explain how you got started and what it takes to get to that level.
Well, I started at Hartford, Connecticut in the Eastern League. When I came out of the Coast Guard, I got a job with the Hartford Braves, Class AA of Eastern League, and I did whatever they wanted me to do. So, and then I was recommended by Charlie Blossfield, the general manager of that club, to the Boston Braves, and John Mullen, was the farm and scouting director of the Braves. And he said, can you type? I said, yeah, I learned to type in the Coast Guard. So he said, I'll give you a two-week tryout. So two-week tryout, and here I am. I'm still working in baseball.
Incredible. And not only that, but by the Hall of Fame announced that you were only the second person to receive the Buck O'Neill Lifetime Achievement Award, and well-deserving. Now, when you then had, you know, you've had a lot of people in the game that have gone on to be general managers, managers. Matter of fact, four of them in the 206 World Series. What were some of the characteristics that you looked for individuals, whether they be coaches or managers, if they were going to be part of your staff?
Yeah, well, if people recommend people to you, you get recommendations like Tony La Russa was playing for Lauren Babe, and Lauren Babe gets sick, and he says, he told Tony, you run the club, I'll just be on the side and give you a hand here and there. And Lauren Babe said, Roland, this young man is very smart. He says, boy, he's brilliant. He said, pay attention to him. He says, he's tell Bill Veeck about him. And I told Bill Veeck, I said, Lauren Babe said that he's got a young guy there by the name of Tony La Russa, who's been playing for him, and he gave him the running the ball club, and he says so I told Bill Veeck, I said, I think I got a prospect for you, Bill, on a potential manager down the line. He said, well, haven't been spring training, says I'll get to know him. I says, yeah, you should spend time with him. And Bill spent some time with him, and he says, Lauren Babe is right. This guy has a great future. So he says, where do we have an opening? I said, well, we have an opening at Knoxville in AA. He said, well, that's hard to start, but let's give him a chance. And Tony took that Knoxville club, and they won the championship, and Bill and I went down to celebrate when he won the championship, and then he had Harold Baines on his club, and he says, this young man's a great clutch hitter. He says, boy, the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning hitter, one of the best I've seen, he said. And so I said to Bill, I said, Bill knew Harold Baines from high school days, and he said, well, we don't want him because I saw him in high school, but he says, let's see what he can do. And, you know, if Harold Baines didn't have arthritic knees, he would have been a Hall of Fame in my book, because he was one of the great clutch hitters that I've been encountered.
Roland,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, being with La Russa now all that time, what made him this good?
Well, he was so smart, you know. He got a law degree. He used his bonus money to go to school, and took quite some time, but he got a law degree. So that indicated the intelligence that he had and possesses. And then when he became a managerial job, he said, well, the best manager I managed against in the minors, he says, by far was Jim Leland. So we hired Leland to be his third base coach. So the two of them became Hall of Fame type managers. So that's the way it is. Bertie Tebbets was one who had told me, when listen who told you, he said, then you can judge their ability by the fact that you remember what they told you precisely, and that you make moves accordingly on the people that impress you. So Bertie was another great tutor. So you have to be fortunate. I always said I was as good as the people working with you and for you. So, and that's the way the attitude that you have, and you just celebrate sort of the abilities that others have, that you give them chances to grow. And so Dave Dombrowski was a young man who wanted to get into baseball, and when I told Bill Veeck, I said, boy, I think I've got a great prospect here. And said, well, let's hire him. So, he came around as a young man and just grew to great proportions, as he still is today.
You know, I remember you talking about this when I was with you. Dombrowski was relentless. I mean, he just he had a passion for it. He just wanted... He stayed with it all the time. He kind of, contacted you all the time, and you saw that something.
Yes. So then when we hired him, he would work at the office all day, and then he'd stick around after the games, because Bill Veeck would gather in the bar's room when the scouts would come in, and the wee hours in the morning, and Dave would get home at 2 o'clock in the morning. And his mother got worried. She called Bill Veeck, says, you're going to kill this young man. My son doesn't get any sleep. but Dave thrived on it, because he was grasping all of the great brilliance of Bill Veeck. So that those are the prospects that you find as players and also as young people to get into the game, who really have a great passion for it, want to learn, and then the good people that in the game that then recognize that and help them grow. And so it's as Bertie Tebbets used to say, remember who told you.
Yeah, and if you know Mr. Heeman, folks, you know that he is always there for everybody. I know he's been there for me many times, and I want to thank him for it. Roland, you've obviously been through a lot of players. You've had to pick a lot of players, make decisions, make trades. I understand, at the major league level, you got to have a certain skill set, okay? You got to be able to do something skill-wise. But outside of skills, what were you looking for?
Well, you look for what you feel the potential that the player has. And don't just look for the negatives, look for the positives. So that's where you make trades, on the fact that you see something that that player has a desire, a determination, ability, a natural ability, and then working at it to become better and better and better.
You know, and the other thing is, as long as I've known you, communication has been a key. You're always calling people and you're always writing notes, even though we've got technology nowadays. Explain why you do that.
Well, when you write the notes, then you're capturing the situation completely, and you dwell on it and expand on it, and that's how you determine that you get excited about what you feel people can do. Like Chuck Tanner, his enthusiasm, his positive. He was the most positive guy, never had a bad day, and would take players and grab them by the shoulders and say, look, you're happy to be a major league. You can be an all-star. Don't be just happy in being here. You grow to the great potential that you have. So enthusiasm, drive, and having fun, and capturing the great moments. So my slogan was enjoy the moment. So I enjoyed the clutch hits that Harold Baines possessed at tough situations, and on and on.
Now, Roland, when you started off, I believe with the Braves, Milwaukee Braves at that time.
Yes.
You had to do everything as a general manager, correct?
Well, when I was with the Milwaukee Braves as a youngster, I was assistant to a great guy, John Mullen, who was a great mentor to me. He was farm and scouting director, and he delegated to me assignments that I wasn't sure that I could handle, but I did it with enthusiasm, and I grew from that and then passed it on to others that accept the challenges and then go with them and have fun with it, and then you'll see it blossom.
You know, and that's great advice, because, you know, coming from an individual who, you've been through all the levels of the game to get to where you are at currently now with the Arizona Diamondbacks. You've won World Series. You know, if you had any advice for young people who wanted to get in the game, whether it be as, you know, front office people or coaching, what would that be?
Well, have fun and learn and get excited about the situations when they're working out, and strive to get better and be creative. And I encourage players to get their education. And so we would give players scholarship money to go to college also, and many of them didn't even attempt to challenge it.
Great point, because you've also have a program for former players or current players at Roosevelt University. You brought up education. You've helped a lot of players continue their education.
Yes, I encourage them completely. I said, get your degree. It will help you in the world, the real world, by having an education. So I would go around the minor league teams and talk to players at length. Use the scholarship money that the club has given you. If you don't use it, they'll just cast it away. And many did, and then that helped them to blossom into good leaders and rounded people.
Fantastic. Roland, I got to thank you. This has been a great talk. If there's any last-minute things you want to tell our coaches, players, and parents around the world, any last-minute advice?
Well, enjoy the moment is a great slogan to have, that when you something good happens, celebrate it. I mean, just enjoy it and see that that person will benefit from it completely by the fact that they captured the moment, enjoyed it, and then get creative-minded to blossom into even better individuals than they thought they could be.
Folks, that is the voice of one of the greatest general managers in the game ever. He started off as a assistant scouting director in 1957 with the Milwaukee Braves, three-time winner of MLB's Executive of the Year, and also the Hall of Fame announced he was the second person to receive the Buck O'Neill Lifetime Achievement Award. What a great show between Fred Clair and Roland Heeman. Roland, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I think this is going to be an outstanding show, and a lot of our folks around the world are going to learn a lot of things from what you just said.
Well, call me again anytime. I'll try to help you, and if you'll help others, fulfillment for me. I thrive on it, to see the blossoming of young people becoming contributors to our game, and to be creative, to have the perpetuity of success. One of my proud moments is having developed the Arizona Fall League, for instance, has helped players blossom into coming stars in the major leagues and help the history of the game. Thank you very much, Pete.
Well, my pleasure, Roland. And knowing Roland over 20 years, he mentioned one thing about helping people, but he has done so much for so many people in the game. So God bless you, Roland, and hope to see you soon.
Okay, Pete. Thank you very, very much. You made my day. Thank you.
You made mine. I can tell you that. Bye-bye.
Did we tell you that was going to be a great show? Thank you to General Managers Roland Heeman and Fred Clare, two just first-class individuals who just gave some fantastic information to everybody around the world on what it takes to be a leader, to be in baseball, and to work your way up into a system. That was outstanding. So thank you. Special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer of the Lineup Media Group. Check them out at lineupmediagroup.fm. They have many podcasts, and they're outstanding. It's the fastest-growing podcast company in the world, so check them out. And don't forget, check us out. We are on Twitter, at Baseball Out. I've got a lot of great information, baseball development stuff. Check it out. Forward it to all your friends. Ask them to join the show. We're also on Facebook at Baseball Outside the Box. Same thing. Forward that to all your friends on Facebook so that way they join our page and follow us. The more you do that, the more listeners we get, the better the game becomes, and the greater the show. So thanks to all our listeners for helping us out. We really appreciate it. This is a show, remember, that interviews baseball's best minds who love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.